What's up and welcome back to the Kind of Funny screencast. This time we are about to review and break down the second half of Invincible Season 2. Of course, I am Tim Geddes. I am joined today by the big daddy himself, Greg Miller.
Hello!
The producer slash seducer, Nick Scarpino.
Top of the morning to you.
And the Nitro Rifle, Andy Cortez.
Top of the morning to you.
Oh, I'm so excited to talk to you all about this show. What a show. It's been incredible with quite possibly the worst release schedule.
Very bad.
For those who don't know, they decided to have Invincible Season 1 happen a couple years ago. It's animated, so it took a long time to keep making more. They eventually put out a special, an Adam Eve special, that was like a one-off. And then they did Season 2, 4 episodes, week to week, and then took like a 3 or 4 month break, and then did another 4 episodes. And I feel like it just absolutely killed the momentum for a show that needed the momentum. It needs the eyeballs. It needs the support
season
as much as
possible.
Season 1
was so successful, so popular, and this just did not feel like an event. That
it did
back, that this is happening, that this is like a lot of limping. Oh, did you see it? Did you not see it? Oh, is it back? I don't know.
So before we get into spoilers, which we will in just a second, I just want to let everybody know, if you haven't watched yet, please go watch this show. If you did watch it again. Support this shit, because this is incredible. We are getting such a good story done so well. And we have read the comics. We know how good it ends. We know how good the entire story is. So we want to make sure that we get there. So support this over on Amazon, even though Amazon are making the worst decisions ever.
Jerks.
Now, with that out of the way, we're going full spoilers from here on out. Keep that in mind. But this is the Kind of Funny screencast, where we get together to talk about the latest in TV, movies, and trailers. If you like that, you might want to get the Kind of Funny membership. That will get you every show we do ad-free. You can watch live as we record them, and you get the daily exclusive Greg Way. Shout out to our Patreon producers, James Hastings, Casey Andrew, Kieran Hofesapien, Carl Jacobs, Kashan Patel, Karen Lindner, and Nathan Lamothe. Thank you all so very much. You are the best of us.
And Tim, not only do you get all those rewards, mm-hmm. you get to say that you support a little small company in San Francisco doing our darndest, little indie company.
And I mean, speaking of that, I just want to say it. We're only doing this screencast because you guys wanted it so badly. Like, it is hard to get everybody to watch all the stuff with how much we have to play and watch and do and all the things. And this is not a complaint. It's just a reality if it was up to me and we had unlimited time, we'd be doing weekly breakdowns of these because I'm just loving it so much. It's just hard to get everyone to be able to do all that. But we saw y'all be like, yo, y'all need to talk about Invincible. Y'all need to support the show. It needs the help. And I'm like, I know. So that's why we're doing this. And it's because of your support. So thank you very much for all of that. And also thank you to Factor, Robin Hood, and Dragon's Dogma 2. But we'll talk about those later. I want to get into it. Remember, full spoilers, everybody. First thing I want to say, I know I've been talking a lot, but I just need to get this out of the way, Nick, because I don't know if you realize the significance of what happened in the finale.
Go for it.
It was the Spectacular Spider-Man.
Josh Keaton, really?
Josh,
it was Josh
fucking
Keaton. It was the Spectacular goddamn Spider-Man, Nick. I popped off so hard. So hard. Now, Greg, why did that happen?
Of course, in comic book land, in the world, there was a crossover here with Marvel. There was an actual issue where Invincible went through one of the portals and ended up here in the actual book itself. When this is all happening and Angstrom's teleporting him around, right? You see him get kicked in there, take out the legs, and where, oh, you're in Marvel. Then they actually did a Marvel / Invincible thing where that happened. And he had a whole bunch of jokes about everybody's name, which is why the Batman joke here is great, but it was even better when there's a whole conversation between Spider-Man and him. Like, what is your name? Spider-Man. Spider-Man? Isn't that lazy? Like, what's your name? Invincible. Yeah, maybe I do need to rethink this. And then he went and met the other Avengers, and he's like pointing at them all, just giving them the most on-the-nose names of all time, talking to Wolverine or whatever. It was great.
So good. So good. But in this world, we get my Spider-Man, Andy. What'd you think about that?
I thought it was hilarious reading the follow from Robert Kirkman. Him mentioning, you know, hey, so what's up with the, Spider-Man and Batman? He's like, we have no idea what you're talking about. Like, those were just like random characters that we created. We have no.
That's hilarious.
I just love the way I love how cool he played it. I thought it was really damn cool. Like, I initially had that feeling of what was going to happen because the jogger in the earlier episode, who's like before the episode starts and he's like kind of out of breath and he's like, "Come on, you can do this, man." I had paused. I was like, "Whose voice is that?" And I saw it was Josh Keaton, and I was like, "Oh shit." He's just taking a little random small role, I guess.
Sure.
And then eventually we get, the big reveal that he is also the voice of Spider-Man. I thought it was really damn cool. Super sick. loved this version of whatever, what do they call him, Web? No,
Agent Spider.
Agent Spider, Agent right. Spider. I thought it was really damn cool. And like, it's hard to get super excited about multiversal type things nowadays, especially with just how over-inundated we've been with multiversal stories. thinking about the Green Portal and like Rick and Morty, like we've seen that a million times there. And I know that this all did it first, but for me, who's not a comic book reader, this is like well-treaded territory, and it's still super awesome and
they don't hang out
well
too long
done.
With the riot. They actually, I think, you know, they avoid the multiverse of madness problem we most of us had on the review of like they're going into these universes and you get to see that they're different. Where here's a dinosaur universe and here's this thing. They're like, okay, yeah. That's fun. I like that.
Yeah, and they're doing storytelling in such a smart way that it's kind of like perfect storytelling for me, where there's always these little breadcrumbs that you wonder, are we going to get a solution or are they going to resolve this issue? And they may not this season, but when it does pop up again, you're just like, God damn, dude, they're on their P's and Q's. They are accounting for every single little setup that they are essentially setting up in this universe. I freaking loved this season. I didn't like it as much as season one, but that's a really, really high mark to hit.
Totally.
It's still like absolute must watch though. Like if you care about Invincible, if you care about animated properties and just really, really good stories, this needs to be watched and supported.
Nick, what do you think of this?
I mean, I love the season. I do wish that they had released it all at once week to week, because I think, you know, especially reading through the comic books, they don't really lament on any of these big things like these interdimensional rifts or these other worlds, all these things. The comic books go along at a fast enough clip that when you're already truncating it for an hour-long episode of television, things can go by very, very quickly. And so for me, coming back to the last half of the season, I was like, wait, oh, right, Langstrom Arms, that guy's in this. I forgot. And I had to kind of recalibrate where I was and do a little research on what was going on with it. And you just don't have the emotional touchstone that you would if you got to watch these week to week, or even, dare I say, we go back to just dumping them all at once, like I wish X-Men 97 was at this point. Because come on, looking forward to that, right? But ultimately, I actually would disagree with Andy. I don't think that maybe season one was more fun because it's sort of the origin story of it, but I think the fun of Invincible is where we're at right now, right? Is that conflict between him and his dad and his mom, Alan the alien growing in power, overarching conflict of, you know, I forget the name of the group that's against the Viltrumites, the sort of like galactic.
The coalition.
The coalition, right? So that stuff's all super fun for me. And then sort of seeing how everything evolves in a way that you probably wouldn't even expect it to is going to be really, really fun for the next season. But ultimately, I think the voice cast is phenomenal. I think the animation is phenomenal, even when it's not phenomenal. They're making fun of the animation. And I was so confused about the Spider-Man thing, and in my brain, because I watched a lot of recently, I think I went back and watched Young Justice. I thought it was the Spider-Man from the DC universe, the bad guy.
Yeah,
what's that guy called?
I don't remember.
It's like Monkey Man or something like that, right?
I don't know the reference you're making.
Great, well, fair enough. I'll look it up.
Ambush Bug. I don't know.
I'll look at it.
Something Young Justice, channel, same creator as Spectacular Spider-Man, right?
There you go.
Isn't it Greg?
It's wild that I liked that.
Oh no,
so much
did
it,
I know Greg. Yes. Yeah. Gargoyles in Young Justice. I didn't know him as Greg. Spectacular Spider-Man. Man.
One day, you and Ben are going to love Spectacular Spider-Man. Yeah. You have taste, unlike some people.
I want to give a special shout-out
Spider-Man rocks
to Steven Yeun's performance. Yeah. Steven Yeun's performance throughout the whole season, throughout the whole run of the series, has been amazing. But these last final episodes were, in my opinion, just a different level of line delivery and getting into that emotion and selling the trauma and selling the pain. He does such a fucking phenomenal job in these throughout the whole season, like I just mentioned. But man, those last final two episodes, and especially the final episode, I think he just does such a great job of selling that emotion and making you feel that pain with him and making you feel that discomfort that he's feeling. I was just so impressed by it, and I just like, I want more of it now, and it just sucks that we're gonna have to wait a decent amount longer. It feels
there is a solution though, Andy.
Read the books, buddy.
I'm gonna have Steven Yeun voice all that.
Honestly, no, Greg. I mean, the books are so
good. Go for it, Nick.
No, I was just gonna say the books are so good. Definitely worth a read still, even if you watched the series.
Greg is somebody that has read all the books.
Yeah.
That's somebody that's probably put more people onto Invincible than anyone on this planet.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
No book spoilers, obviously.
We're not spoiling the future spoilers.
No future spoilers for that. We're just spoiling season one and two in the special of the show. What do you think of season two?
Fantastic. You know what I mean? I think what I said this in season one, and it's definitely worth saying again here. What's incredible about this is that they totally took this to a new platform, a new form of art, and were able to keep the same oh my god moments. You know what I mean? Like turning the page, reading the book, you know, and finding Debbie there with the broken arm and Angstrom there and her trying to protect Oliver and Mark walking in, him going, you know, welcome home or whatever. Like, I remember that moment of like, holy fuck, right? The same thing of Mark, like, I thought you'd be stronger when he's covered in blood.
God damn.
Holy fuck. Even for me, a moment that always resonated with me because it was a cliffhanger thing was Nolan in prison. I think I missed my wife. You know what I mean? Yeah. I still hated Omni-Man / Nolan at that point, right? Like, the fact that they are able to deliver those moments in the comic and then years later adapt it to a cartoon and have it still fucking resonate the same way and see you, not you, but the audience that I see that are only watching the show react to it the same way is so impressive. So incredibly impressive. And yeah, and then I would echo everything we've said so far of like, these performances are insane. Sandra Oh killing it out there. Obviously, Steven killing. I mean, across the board, everyone just being amazing, right? And, you know, I think at times for me, there's the things where, no future spoilers or whatever, but there's some time where I'm like, all right, like, I'm excited for this thread to end because I'm more excited to get to the next chapter that I know we're going in Mark's life or where we're going here and blah, blah, blah. And having been such an Angstrom fan of the books, to see that here, even like, these two episodes were the first two. I was like, or not, well, the first two of the second half. I was like, yeah, all right, cool. Let's get to it, though. Let's get to it. I want to get there. I want to see it. I want to go. You know what I mean? And so to finally get there and go, I was like, all right, great. Like, they did a great job adapting one of my favorite villains in the series, right? Bring it over here.
What do you all, as the comic book readers, feel were the most missed opportunities?
I personally, I don't remember every single detail of the comics.
Yeah, that's the tough
part. I don't
think
that there were any. Like, yeah, and that's that doesn't jump to my mind.
I'm definitely the same where, like, you know, season one I reread to catch up. I didn't have time to do that this time around, so I was able to catch more stuff. It's not so much, I don't see the missed opportunities. What I usually see are the, oh, that's a smart change. Oh, yeah. I'm glad you did that. Oh, the way we're ending Mark and Amber's relationship here, and not that I didn't like it the first time around, but this one feels more adult, more natural, more modern. You know what I mean? Where I appreciate that part of it or whatever. I can't say as I had that, you know, I mean, I'm trying to run through in my head now anything that didn't work, you know what I mean? But no, like, I thought it was good. I don't have that. As a fan of the source material, I'm not saying, like, I can't believe they didn't do this.
What a win.
I'm more caught up in the fact that, again, like, those moments hit the same way. The Batman joke hits the same way. The talking to the animator about the seance dog.
So good.
Because that's the thing from the comic, literally about the comic creator, where he's like, yeah, sometimes people, you know, get mad because I use the same panels over and over again, and they have a page that's just like
all nine panels are him without.
Isn't that kind of lazy? No. You know what I mean? It's like brilliant, like a joke to then have it translate and work so well.
So good, man. Yeah, I'm obsessed with the show. It's so good. I think one of the most special things, again, just to echo what everyone said, but it's just how good this is in a world that we've seen so much superhero stuff, good, bad, everything in between, universes, multiverses, everything, every combination of those things, right? Like, we've seen so much, and for something to be able to do it all so well in a way that is introducing us to so many new characters or people, to new characters that are so based on tropes of other characters, but at no point are we like, well, that's a lesser Flash, or that's a lesser Superman, or that's whatever. It's like, no, I believe in the immortal. I believe in multicates and like all of this. Like, there, it's a duplicate.
Just saving you the comments.
Thank you. So freaking cool. And something that I've been thrilled about is I finally got to convince two of my friends, Curran and James, to watch now that enough of the show has been out. So leading into these final four, they watched season one, season two, and they are just all in. And having them text me the updates and the freakouts of every cliffhanger, I was like, this is so cool that two people that on the same text thread, we're talking shit about some Marvel decisions and DC decisions and all the movies that we're all watching and just like, oh man, like, this show's not as good as it could have been. And oh, Loki was great, that we had a win, whatever. To get something that is just a 10 out of 10, like, it's just, this is what this should be, is so refreshing and just such a good reminder that we're not done with this stuff. And like, this is all shit that is just based on something from 2003.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like,
that's my thing too, is like, it doesn't feel dated. which is crazy to think.
Well, it's because they've updated so much of it.
Yeah, yeah, fair, you know what I mean? Yeah. Fair. It would be interesting to go back and read the comics. But even then, like, even the, all of these through lines and these threads are like, we've seen them, to Tim's point, like multiple times, but these still feel relevant and new and still a commentary and a satire on all that stuff, which speaks to just the actual source material being that good.
And it is that good. And it's like, I love that we jump into multiverse this soon into this universe. And they're just like, yeah, let's just deal with it in the biggest way possible. Let's not dabble with it and make this big thing that they have to figure out. It's like, no, it exists. It's here. We're throwing them in. There's multiple versions. There's evil Invincibles. Like, there's just so much stuff. And they're like, we're going to trust the audience. They're going to understand it. And then we do. It's such a amazing thing there. But just before I stop here, I just want to give two quick shout outs to.
Can you read Cameron Kennedy's message also when you, before it gets passed in the chat?
He said, y'all see the gun Invincible hits the big headed guy with when he leaves the portal is an actual Fortnite gun, yeah. Implying his skin is canon. Yeah, that was freaking cool as
the
hell.
Actual Fortnite skin in the game. Like that's like he exists there as well, which is really, really
so smart. But we were talking about performances and specifically Steven Yeun. Oh my lord, the last episode, not just the performance but the writing, and Robert Kirkman wrote the last episode of the season. Like, it is such a good example of what makes this show work, and it's that, yes, it's playing with the tropes and storylines and ideas that we've heard a million times, but it's about the characters more than anything. And we've dealt with Spider-Man No More, we've dealt with like the hero struggling of like, fuck, I think I need to kill this guy or whatever. I don't think we've ever seen it done this well and performed this well. And like, I believe that this kid is going through such turmoil inside, and hot off of him and Amber's breakup that was emotionally devastating. Like the way that they set that up and had it happen felt so real, so modern, and like impactful in a way that I was like, I care about these characters as if they're real people. And it, like, they felt like real people.
It felt so natural because it was slowly drip fed, and it wasn't just a sudden break off. There were tons of, are they gonna split, are they not, are they gonna stay together, they're trying to mend this relationship, you know, him getting advice from the costume creator and being like, you got to talk to her, what are you doing here,
why are you talking to me.
I loved how natural all of it felt, and it never felt like we were getting too much of it. I think the most masterful thing about Invincible, and it's something that I've also applauded the boys for, was it's just juggling all of these different plot beats and not ever feeling like we're not getting enough of this or we're getting too much of that. Like, everything feels so perfectly discussed and showcased, and whenever we are brought back to a certain moment of, you know, whatever story, you know, whether it's a B, C, or D plot, again, it reminds you of the boys, where all of, they don't really feel like B, C, or D plots. They all feel so equally important because of how much love they're all getting and how much you care about all these different moments.
The Martian stuff. Like, would you have expected to go back to that? Or like in the tomb, the weird mummy stuff. Yeah. It's like they just go back to everything, man.
I loved that about the comic.
Well, I want to hear exactly what you have to say.
No.
After a quick word from our sponsors.
Heck yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Factor. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. A ton of us here at Kinda Funny have been so thankful for Factor since we've been in the new studio, and you can too. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Head to factormeals.com/kindoffunny50 and use code kindoffunny50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code kindoffunny50 at factormeals.com/kindoffunny50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. This episode is brought to you by Dragon's Dogma 2. Dragon's Dogma 2 is the highly anticipated action RPG successor to the cult classic Dragon's Dogma, released in 2012. Dragon's Dogma 2 boasts a richly detailed and deeply explorable fantasy world created using immersive physics, character AI, and the latest in graphics from Capcom's RE engine. This single-player action RPG challenges players to use their creativity and curiosity to shape their own experience. The world of Dragon's Dogma 2 revolves around choice. Both your party of pawns and enemies alike will react dynamically to your actions on the battlefield, whether you cling to the backs of monsters or seek to dispatch them from afar. Whether you like melee combat, shooting bows and spells, scaling enormous monsters, or using your environment to your advantage, Dragon's Dogma 2 has something for you. And the character creator is easy to use with a ton of customizability to get as creative as you want. So go to dragonsdogma.com to buy the game and start your epic quest today. This episode's brought to you by Robinhood. Did you know that even if you have a 401k for retirement, you can still have an IRA? Robinhood has the only IRA that gives you a 3% boost on every dollar you contribute when you subscribe to Robinhood Gold. But get this, now through April 30th, Robinhood is even boosting every single dollar you transfer in from other retirement accounts with a 3% match. That's right, no cap on the 3% match. Robinhood Gold gets you the most for your retirement thanks to their IRA with a 3% match. This offer is good through April 30th. Get started at robinhood.com/boost. Subscription fees apply. And now for some legal info. Claim as of Q1 2024, validated by Radius Global Market Research. Investing involves risk, including loss. Limitations apply to IRAs and 401ks. 3% match requires Robinhood Gold for 1 year from the date of first 3% match. Must keep Robinhood IRA for 5 years. The 3% matching on transfers is subject to specific terms and conditions. Robinhood IRA available to U.S. customers in good standing. Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC, is a registered broker-dealer.
All
got
good.
Caught there. Go for it, Nick.
Yeah, I think the strength of it is just those arcs, right? Like, you know, the relationship breakup, the him kind of confronting the fact that he's like, why am I even going to college in the first place?
Yeah.
These are all questions that you ask as a reader when you're reading Spider-Man. You're like, what are you doing? But Spider-Man never had an income. Whereas, you know, Invincible is like, what if I just got Cecil to pay me?
He's like, why does he just pay me?
This is my job. Like, this should be my job. I should get compensated for this, which is such a no-brainer question. But the fact that they get to ask that in this series is interesting.
Well, the
right?
even cooler follow-up of, well, then he would own you more, even more. You'd be working for Cecil.
You'd be
more,
yeah,
beholden. Shit, you're right. Like, I just love that they kind of answer those questions by themselves.
Yeah. But I like that. I mean, he even has that moment where he's like, what am I going to be, like a dentist or something like that? What am I going to do? I'm not going to do that. This is what I do for a living, which is interesting.
Well.
It's cool.
And I'm asking that the whole time as well. Like, anytime I see, you know, when they talk about going to Hawaii on vacation, where are we going to stay? Oh, there's a lot of nice beaches. I'm like, why would I just fucking break into a building? You're invincible. I'm like, yeah, but.
Or just fly back and forth.
That's why you
can't really. Yeah, you just can't really do that. No, but flying back and forth, you can't fly too fast.
Crush your lungs. Yeah, she won't be able to
rip her skin off.
Yeah, rip her skin off.
Jesus. That's so cool.
I just love all of that. So we discussed the first half of the season on a screencast, right? Okay. Because there were definitely a lot of moments that I had kind of forgotten about. What I had done before watching this was, before watching episode 5, was I looked and episode 4 was like halfway done or something like that. Because I maybe had gone back to watch it, or maybe my dad was using my account. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to just rewatch episode 4. And it just ends so strongly. And I think about Rhea Seehorn's performance as the alien on that planet, the little bug lady or whatever. Just hearing all of the discussions between the Viltrumites being like, dude, who cares? Their lives are insignificant. And Nolan, somebody that you hate because you saw the way he treated the mother, and you see him being like, you know, I used her, whatever the fuck that he was telling me.
Called her a pet.
Yeah, she was my pet essentially. And you're like, wow, how the fuck could you say any of this? But then you see the inner turmoil of, I love that moment of even episode 4 of him being like, why do I care about these people? You know,
yeah.
It's so cool to see. And J.K. Simmons' performance is doing an incredible job doing it all.
Even Immortal, right? Like, has a very similar arc here, right? Of like actually missing duplicate. And that, it's because you loved her. I've loved lots of people. Why is this one different?
Yeah. And that, I mean, talk about some shocking moments there. Like, that fight scene was,
oh my God.
As somebody, again, who has no idea what the fuck happens, like, being like, oh my God, they're killing off two different characters that we, like, holy shit, I can't believe they're doing this right now. And feeling that tension in that scene, it reminds me of why I really loved watching Game of Thrones and The Boys, because you don't know when someone's going to bite the bullet. And fortunately for Duplicate, you know, she kind of saved herself and had other ways of not, you know, not permanently dying. But I just love that they are able to build that tension in a way that makes you legitimately worry for these characters. And the way I kind of feel in and out of multiversal stories where it's like, yeah, but like, does it really matter when there's all these other, how can you make this universe feel like it matters when I know that there's a million other variants out there? And even seeing the other Invincible crew when they approach, I'm blanking on Invincible's main name. What's his real name?
Mark Grayson.
Mark. when they approach Mark on that desolate planet, and they're all older versions of themselves, you still kind of like care that those are them from the future or whatever. And I just love that moment between him and Adam, even being like, "Go tell her that you love her." Or don't tell her that you love her. Just tell her something so she can move on. Dude, that's so powerful, dude.
I do think that in the comic books, I think getting a little bit more of that, getting a little bit more of the robot monster girl, getting a little bit more of that, those characters, I think is beneficial. So if you are thinking about reading them, please go think. Because I think we skip through some of those moments so fast in these episodes because we just don't physically have time or the budget to do it. That is the one downside. Having said that, though, one of the characters that I absolutely had, you kind of hate in the comic books, but is just so fucking perfect in this because of the voice actor, is Rex Blood. Jason Matsoukas, literally during that, the one episode he gets Hollywood gets shot in the head,
man,
is, I'm like, make a series about him. He's so fun to watch and so silly, and he's such a good actor and such a good voice actor that I'm just enthralled anytime he's on screen. And I did not like that. You're sort of meant to not like that character in the comic books because he's kind of an asshole.
He's a dickhead, yeah.
Well, he's a douchebag. Like, yeah. He kind of mistreats people, and he kind of, you know, he cheats on...
Even him on having Adam that moment here, that moment of self-reflection of being like, man, I saw my life before my life flashed before my eyes. I didn't like what I saw.
Yeah.
Like, I've been an asshole. I've been a terrible person to so many people and so many, like, women in my life, too. That shit was really damn cool to hear, you know?
Yeah, yeah, totally. And also, we talked a lot last season about how the animation was great, animation was great at times, but it was like, at others. And the fight scenes, sometimes it looked great, and sometimes it was like, whatever. This season, I'm very surprised overall at how often I was like, whoa, that was awesome. You know, like, I feel like I thought that way more times than I thought, oh, I wish the budget was higher on this. Like, I feel like I was talking to Roger about this earlier. Like, the art style of the show is not my favorite, but I don't care about that because it's so authentic to the actual comic that I'm like, hey, yeah, go for it. Like, I'd actually rather it look like this than something more stylish because that's what this is. And I'm like, they're doing such a good job at nailing what the comic is that, like, yeah, let's make that as special as possible in TV format.
As somebody who doesn't have a touch onto the comics, I'm definitely on the opposite side where, like, it's less of the budget and more of the art style for me, where I look at X-Men 97, I'm like, oh man, I kind of wish Invincible had more of these sort of vibes. But yeah, I think they still do a great job with the action scenes that matter the most. And seeing the budget put into the big high-flying fights and explosions and all that stuff, that's where you sort of see the budget shine a bit more. I also wanted to call out Joe Mom, probably short for Joe Mama,
Joe Mama.
YouTube chat, Patreon chat, calling out the whole writing, the writer aspect. Read what I wrote, Mark. Read my books or whatever. And I just love when a movie or a TV show sort of plants those seeds of, the answers to stop this insane, powerful force out there, they are not invincible. We have the answers to know how to kill these things. And it's just so cool to see Mark have that
realization,
that discovery, that realization, reading these books and being like, holy shit, oh my God, these are not only stories about my dad, but these are stories to kind of bring down the empire. It's so damn cool, man.
Yeah, to me, I think I it's just such a strong setup in general, right? Because the Ultra Mighty Empire is so strong, and you see him, you see it here, even with like with these final episodes where Anissa comes in, and you know, we kind of all know that storyline and how that's going to play out. But the fact that Mark is just not even close to as strong as like a mid-level Viltrumite, let alone some of the other Viltrumites that we're going to see in the next season, which is just terrifying. And when you're reading that in the comics, you feel that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's such a great place to put your main character because he is vulnerable. He's not invincible. Spoilers. Well, he kind of is, but he's not.
Not everyone knows what happens with that. I don't think Andy knows what happens
with
that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not spoiling anything. I'm just saying, like, the fact that they can set this character up, and when Mark is in danger, you feel that he is in danger because we've seen him time and time again kind of get his ass handed to him by every Viltrumite he's ever been up against, right? I don't think he's ever really fared well. Even when he was fighting with his dad, and his dad is one of the most powerful ones out there. He's got his ass handed to him by three people. So it's such a great setup and so fun for them to play with that going forward. And granted, this got a long and windy road ahead of us.
This whole Allen storyline is so fucking cool.
Shout out to Seth.
Like, I love Seth Rogen's performance as well. And I love this, like, you know, storytelling tool that they can use for the future. In watching Allen take this big ass hit and being like, oh my God, I'm not dead. Holy shit. Like that, I was able to take that hit.
And again, setting up how strong she is, right?
Yeah.
After seeing her beat the shit out of Mark.
Yeah. Yep.
And seeing him make her bleed and her be like, what the hell? Like, I love what's happening there. And even that reveal was really surprising to me. I didn't ever see that coming. I just thought like, oh, they pulled the plug on him. He's dead. Yeah. So I love that coming back and, you know, I'm here for, hey, you're, you know, he's like, oh, you're that alien. He's like, no, I'm here for you, man. Like, yeah. Let's talk. It's so cool. I'm so excited.
But the way that J.K. Simmons' character, like the Nolan character, is written, which is like almost Shakespearean, and that he's very well written, and he speaks like almost on an elevated level, and then to have that juxtaposed with Seth Rogen just being Seth Rogen, hey man, <That's> right. Like I'm just here for you, is so perfect. And so
I loved the stakes of the final fight, of it being this like multi-portal dimensional thing with Angstrom, and the stakes of Debbie and the kid,
Oliver,
of like her protecting this little baby and Mark having to deal with it, protecting both of them, her getting her arm messed up, like all of it just felt so scary and like, oh, things can happen here. And like they've done such a good job of making us care about this freaking kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This kid that like, you know, we shouldn't care about. And it's like, well, of course we do. And the way that they make their characters care about it, we do too. And like, I was so impressed with how the stakes were set and then the action met that, where the fight was so damn cool with Invincible, and the way that he physically, what he was doing was amazing, but then mentally him breaking down when he's trapped there. Fuck. And the monologue that he's giving about realizing like, I had to do that, but now I'm stuck here. But did I have to do that? I can't believe I did it. Like that stuff was just perfect.
Real quick, put a pin in that. Mm-hmm. Put a pin in that, everybody. Stick a little pin there. What I wanted to ask first was a point that I completely just blanked on. So remove the pin. We're back to the pin. We're back in the pin, Tim. Why did he say I won?
Because he beat him.
But yeah.
He was kind of going crazy.
Okay. Was it more of like a, you know, when I think of Walter White at the bottom of the basement where he's laughing, where he's like totally fucked, you know, like was that one of those like I'm kind of going crazy in this moment?
I think it was the breaking point of him starting to question himself and go crazy, because I think that was him being like, I had to do that, I won, I did it, I did the thing, and then it was like
it's that adrenaline rush, right? And then the realization of
I lost who I am. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, but I feel like that was him trying to convince himself that what he just did was worth it, but then he had that realization that like, oh my God, I went too far.
I felt like he had already had that realization, and it just felt a little out of order for me. Where we had had the breakdown. We had the moments where like my subtitles say, like laughing
maniacally.
He's kind of going insane. He's like, oh shit, what the fuck did I just do? You know.
Yeah.
And we see that breakdown already happen, and then he kind of has that line where he goes, "I won," and they cut to a different sequence. I'm like, what's going on there? So that part.
I think it's just super conflicted, right?
Okay.
I think it's that he knew that this was what he had to do because Angstrom was never going to stop, but he's prided himself on. I mean, we've had multiple times in the seasons prior, in the episodes prior, where he's like, I'm not going to kill. And we even have that when he's talking with his dad, and his dad's like, you got to fucking come at these guys. Like it's life or death, because it is life or death. And Mark is just not ready for that. And this is sort of his, I think you can view this as sort of a milestone in his life of being like, it's a bad thing. But also, does he need to train that kind of violence in himself to be able to take on the Empire? We see that as a viewer. He doesn't see that. But
where that pin was placed,
mm-hmm. Pull it out.
Rewind it.
Oh, shit.
Because back before, we go back in time a couple of minutes.
Make a portal for you.
That was me.
Going back in time. I like
rewind
it.
Thank you.
You want to run on the set again?
I love that we've seen enough properties to where this story that they're telling can kind of like subvert expectations, because I really thought, and I'm glad it didn't happen, I thought that little baby was going to go super and kill the man. similar to what we've seen in The Boys, what we've seen in a lot of stuff.
Superman Returns.
The child of the...
Invincibles.
The one?
Remember Invincibles 2?
Yeah.
Jack.
Incredibles.
Sorry, not Invincibles.
Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah. I really thought that this baby was going to go super and kill Angelo?
Engstrom. Hard one to say.
Yeah.
Engstrom. I want it to be Langstrom, but it's Engstrom Levy.
Yeah, I really thought that, you know, when he's holding that baby and he's like, I'm going to... He'd already broken his mother's arm, and I'm like, holy shit, that was so graphic. That looked awful to see.
Yeah.
But then to be holding the baby by the leg and be like, I'm going to kill this baby. I really thought, like, baby was going to, you know, the Viltrumite was going to really show out there. And I'm really glad that didn't happen, because it felt all too easy to go that route.
Yeah.
And what we got was even better.
Yeah.
Well, a conflict. Having Mark out there just desolate. Holy shit, I'm going to beat this man to death. And because I killed him, now I'm stuck here. Incredible.
For me, I love the Oliver character, and I like it just as a touchstone for Debbie and and her character arc, right? Like, we didn't even touch on that. Literally, he brings home this child who's like, hey, not only is your husband still alive, he's out there procreating again, and we need to take care of this child. What a complex place to put Debbie in. And then, of course, her stepping up and having that character growth of being like, well, we got to take care of this kid.
It's great.
And I'm the only person that can. And then we have the, you know, and then the Cecil relationship where he's like, we should take the kid. And she's like, absolutely not.
And especially giving her some light, even though it's coming from a dark place, I feel is so necessary. Because, like, even, I forget if it was season one. No, it must have been season two. Part one, where she's like dating that guy or whatever, or like almost dating the guy, and like they went to the
and then he finds out the
support group
and all that stuff. It's like she needed this win, quote unquote, and I just feel like they did a great job building to that and like making it believable of like how she feels towards this kid.
That guy was a dick.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you figure she's looking for purpose. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? I think she was a partner for Nolan for so long, and then getting ready for empty nest syndrome with Mark leaving for college. Nolan goes bad, says all these horrible things about her, almost destroys the earth. Mark leaves to be a superhero, right? And suddenly, is real estate enough when that was a means to support your family? I think she sees in Oliver, obviously, a small Mark because he looks so much like Mark, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's easy to fall in love with that. I think the show did an excellent job of something. And this is also, obviously, decades later from me reading it and now being a father. But Thrax's little monologue or messaging there with Mark about, like, well, how could I let him stay here? You know, generations will die, will come and go before he's an adult. Like, what kind of mother would I be to give him that? You know what I mean? And I thought that was, like, a really well done, hey, here's a mother's love, right, of passing this on, almost kind of in a way being, like, an analog to Superman, right, of, like, Jor-El and Lara putting him into the ship to save him from Krypton. I'm going to save him from this place where he will always be an outsider.
Yeah.
He's one of us, but he's not. He'll never even remember me. I'll die before his first words. Like, I thought that was powerful. And then we get there and then, yeah, have Debbie do the, oh my God, this is fucked up. But then as she did in the comic, obviously fall in love with Oliver and treat him as a son and move on that way. I don't remember from the comics. It's possible it was there, but I really appreciated the really quick call out that she used to chew his food.
Oh, right.
Yeah, he doesn't have the enzymes. They don't have our kind of enzymes, so he can't break down food. We're hoping his Voltramite genes will kick in soon. I was like, that's good.
I do want to point out one, not a minor thing. It's very, very minor criticism. I'm 90% joking on this. But Clancy Brown is so good as a voice actor.
So good.
We got to stop. We can't just use him willy-nilly for all the other characters. We can't be doing that, right? Because he's so distinctive of a voice. I think he voices the twins, then he also voices the bad guy, like that puts him in jail. The bad guy with the Cyclops eye. And God bless him. I'm like, you guys, he's a treasure. Okay, you can't be just spreading him out all over the place. I do want to also point out, Greg, that looking, you're rewatching the last episode here.
I just jumped to make sure I was on the money about the laughing and thing or whatever.
And I'm looking at Nolan being carried away here. He's got the nice gray on his side. He's got a nice mustache here. Just saying, we get you on TRT.
Yeah.
We get you some explosive exercise.
You just want everybody
You can be Omni-Man by
There was a
October.
Moment without any of that this morning, though, when I came out of the shower. I was getting ready to get in the shower, and I was like, do I shave it into a mustache just for today?
Dude,
but
I don't have
a Viltrumite shirt or an Omni-Man shirt.
You got an Omni-Man shirt somewhere there.
I feel like if I didn't have that, it'd be like, why is great? If I wear that. You know what I mean? Spoilers maybe for the next time we do one.
Robert Kirkman, if you're watching, please send us all the Viltrumite shirts and the Iron Man shirts and the Invincible shirts.
Langley M. Neely says, Nick's obsessed with tea. He really is.
I'm just saying, you could look like that guy. You got his build.
Why do I got to work out, though? Can't I just do the shirts?
You get a body suit.
You know what I mean?
Do what they do on the boys. We'll put some padded muscles in you, on your shirts.
One thing I love that's not in the comics that the show has and introduced and continues to just surprise me with is the title card, the Invincible, not saying it. Like, they have so much fun with it. And I forget about it as we go into watching a new episode. And then as they start building, every time I'm like, oh, they're going to do the thing.
Now,
it's just great.
Now, I don't know what they're doing, though.
Uh-huh.
So, like, in part one, very, very obvious what they're saying. This story is going to get more and more bloody. This story is going to get more and more deadly. And I don't understand any of what was happening to any of these. Like, the color changing. I don't know.
Everybody. And if you read the comics, but when you see the title card of the last episode, you're like, oh, they're doing this, baby. Oh, they're doing this. What are they doing, everybody? We're not going to tell you. You're going to have to wait and watch the show later. But let us know what's going on in the comments below, what you thought of Invincible Season 2, how hyped you are for Season 3, all the things in between. But until next time, thank you for your support.
Go ahead.
My apologies. Point of clarification, it's Kevin Michael Richardson, not Clancy Brown, who voices the twins.
Clancy Brown is Mr. Krabs.
Krieg. So I apologize. Those are two different voice actors. I will abstain.
Stand down, Nick.
My apologies. Down, everybody. My apologies.
Get on the T. Bye.
Don't get on the T.